Welcome to the Insurers the Best Policy podcast. I'm David Bull, and this is the second of a two-part interview with Richie Witt, co-CEO of Markel. Today, we'll be talking about COVID-19 loss picks and the impact of a potential second wave. We'll also be looking at capital raising and what low interest rates mean for return expectations. And we'll touch on the pandemic as a catalyst for change in the industry. So let's start by talking about COVID-19 from a company perspective. Richie, how comfortable are you in your loss picks, and what impact would a second wave have on your business from an underwriting point of view?
Well, I doubt anyone is particularly comfortable with their COVID-19 losses at this point, and a few reasons why. You know, unless you were around in 1918, this is the first time any of us have seen a pandemic of this magnitude. There have been pandemics, but nothing of the magnitude of COVID-19. So this is our first experience with it. We have no past experience to look at to try to determine, you know, how do we reserve for this event. Unlike natural catastrophes or man-made catastrophes that we're relatively used to dealing with, this is an ongoing event. And part of a second wave, I guess you could also talk about duration. You know, I think back in March, if you had told me we would still be in partial lockdown and most of our people working remotely in September, getting close to October, I would not have believed you. So this has already had a duration longer than I might have expected. And the longer it goes, I think the more potential there is for additional loss. So I think that's an issue. And obviously another wave, if we were to have to go backwards, and example, the UK recently had to take a step back, unfortunately. Again, that's just going to lead potentially to more losses. So while we have tried, just like anything we reserve for at Markel, we've tried to be more likely redundant than deficient, tried to be conservative in setting that reserve, I have never seen as much potential variability around an event as currently exists, I believe, with COVID-19. So until whatever, we have a vaccine or whatever it takes to get largely to the other side of COVID-19, I think there's still the potential for everyone in the industry to potentially have to move reserves out. And that's before even getting into disputes around BI, around event cover, around how reinsurance applies. You would think this would be a short tail event. I think this is going to be a long tail event in a lot of respects.
And obviously, that's sort of looking at business already on the books and how you're reserving for exposures. But I mean, prospectively, I mean, when you're looking at the shape of your underwriting portfolio, I mean, and you and I think several others have taken some actions around it, either retrenching from, you know, some potentially exposed areas, but how do you sort of, you know, make those decisions, I suppose, in this environment?
Well, we're trying our best not to have a knee-jerk reaction, but obviously the first thing everyone started looking at was where could pandemic exposure potentially creep into policies, and, you know, what sort of exclusionary language might be needed. We're trying to look at that on a product-by-product basis and not just slap COVID or pandemic exclusions on every policy. We're trying to be thoughtful about it. But without a doubt, we're having to try to make sure where we're not being paid to take the exposure, we're excluding the exposure in policies going forward. So I think we're probably like all other markets and really taking a look at the portfolio and adding exclusions where necessary, or where we're just not comfortable the economics work anymore for those programs. And in our mind, event is one that, it, you know, is questionable in our mind. We've withdrawn. So lots of work going on to assess the exposure. And it's sort of like silent cyber in some respects, trying to figure out where you specifically grant cover for cyber and where there could be silent cyber resident. And trying to be very clear on where you offer the cover and where you exclude the cover. That is now going on with pandemic as well.
So that kind of addresses it from a Markel perspective, but looking at the, I suppose, the industry and the sort of macro picture. I mean, what's your take on the overall insurability of a pandemic as an exposure, and you know, how, and there have been lots of suggestions as to the kind of way the industry needs to address this situation, but you know, what role should the industry play in any kind of solution?
Well, I'll just say up front, I personally believe that pandemic is not insurable. The whole basic principle of insurance is that you can diversify risk and thus, you know, manage risk. Pandemic is so systemic a risk, the principles of insurance, I think, really just break down. And then I think there's just a basic math issue. The U.S. insurance industry is roughly $800 billion of capital. To this point, the U.S. government has spent $2.4 trillion in assistance to both businesses and individuals. And so you do the math, that's three times the size of the industry. So you could ask the industry to pay, but you'll wipe the industry out and you'll still have the government pay a significant amount. I don't think that makes sense for society. So we, Markel, we, the industry, we want to do our part. We want to, you know, help society and help our communities in this regard. But I think people do have to realize there's a limit to what the industry can financially withstand. I think our infrastructure can be helpful. There may be some way we can participate to a modest extent in terms of losses in future pandemics, but I think people are misguided to think that insurance can be the solution. Really, the only solution in something of this magnitude are governments, because for one main reason, governments can run deficits. When for-profit companies run deficits, management gets fired and ultimately they go out of business.
Right.
So government has to be the solution.
Just sort of switching tracks a little bit, but there's, as we've written about and witnessed, there's been a significant amount of capital raised since COVID-19 set in, and you know, among those capital raises, you know, there's the startups emerging. Do you think that capital inflow is going to temper hardening in the areas you operate in at 1/1 and indeed at other sort of renewal dates?
I really don't believe the incremental capital that has come in so far will have much of an impact on the hardening market. I've seen various numbers, but the number I think I've seen the most is 8 to 10 billion. So if I put that in context of the 800 billion that I just mentioned for the US industry, that's about 1%. So it's really pretty small on the margin. Also, I think the reality is those management teams, when they come into the market, they face the same environment the incumbents did. They face an environment where interest rates are essentially zero. And so to make your cost of capital, you're going to have a significant underwriting profit. I really do believe they will have to be disciplined, just like the incumbents will have to be disciplined. And you know, they want to come in, honestly, and take advantage of the hard market. They don't want to come in and end the hard market. So I'm not worried about 8 to 10 billion of capital. That number would have to grow substantially in my mind, start to have an impact on sort of the basic factors that I feel like, as we talked about earlier, are driving current market dynamics.
And one of those, of course, which we did touch on earlier, is interest rates. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about return expectations in that environment, because I mean, if you sort of look back to the 2000s, and I think, you know, 15% was always sort of seen as the, you know, the kind of, I suppose, the standard target a carrier would be looking at. Of course, you know, part of that was buoyed by harder market conditions in the first half of the 2000s. We've had the long soft market, and those expectations were certainly tempered. Now, of course, we're in an improving environment, but with the low interest rates environment, I mean, how does that sort of play into those expectations? Is 9% the new 15% for this kind of current environment, would you say?
Well, I do think you have to start with interest rates. Interest rates is the gravity which all of the financial markets have to, you know, that's the rules or laws of gravity that all the financial markets have to comply with. Back in the 80s, you would have been talking about a 10-year treasury in the 8% range. Today, we're talking about a 10-year treasury, depending on the day you look at it, 60 basis points, essentially zero. To earn double-digit returns in a capital-intense business today is a Herculean effort. 10% is doing a spectacular job, in my estimation, if interest rates are essentially zero. So I do think you have to deal, you know, none of us can ignore the laws of gravity or the laws of physics. Interest rates are the anchor which all returns have to be measured off of. And in a capital-intense business, if that is zero, getting to 10%, I think that is that's a great job by a manager. And the way you're going to have to do that, kind of going back to previous parts of our conversation, it's going to be on the underwriting side of the business. You're not going to be able to count on the investment portfolio. Cash flow underwriting is dead, absolutely dead. You can't survive in this business cash flow underwriting anymore. So that was a term of the 80s. That term no longer exists.
Fair enough. And how, I suppose, particularly in the long tail casualty space, does that impact underwriting and well, reserving, of course, as well, because, you know, you're kind of looking at the asset and the liability side of the situation there.
Yeah, casualty becomes, you know, it's even more important in terms of casualty business. You know, you could count on the float in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. The float could help you with your return and be, quite honestly, a pretty big portion of your return. And in fact, that was when some people attempted cash flow underwriting, actually write an underwriting loss, and all your return, more than all of your return, came from the float and the rates that you could earn on that. Obviously now pricing and terms and limit management are crucial in casualty. You can't count on the float to make a return. And even more importantly, as we all know, casualty is long tail. So you can't be absolutely certain of your pricing until several years after the fact. So from my standpoint, you need a margin of safety in terms of your pricing today, because you absolutely have to live on the underwriting profit. So it's not good enough, I think, to be sort of 50-50 confident that your pricing is adequate on tail casualty. You need to be 70-30, 80-20 confident in your pricing, because that's the only place your return on capital is going to come from.
Finally, I'd just like to touch a bit on the impact of what we've seen over the last few months in these unprecedented situations we've all found ourselves in, and how that, you know, that's going to change the reinsurance industry going forward from an operational perspective. And, you know, do you think that this is a real catalyst for the technological revolution that, you know, for years and years people have been saying has to take place in the insurance industry to narrow the gap with other areas of financial services? Or, you know, at the same time, we've got a kind of hard market. Is that going to, I don't know, fall by the wayside as people just sort of, you know, look at the returns they potentially can make from the underwriting side and put it on the back burner, as it were, again?
You know, I think this experience that we're all sharing and going through of COVID-19, it's going to impact our industry in two areas. You mentioned technology. I definitely think it's going to impact us in technology. And then talent. I think talent is going to be the other area. So in terms of technology, COVID-19 hasn't changed really the trends in terms of technology. I think it's just accelerated the trends. We, as an industry, I think have been a bit of a laggard, unfortunately, in terms of how we interact with our customers with technology, how we interact with partners with technology. I think COVID has just raised the stakes for us to move along that path at an accelerated pace. We're all working from home. We're making virtual sales calls. Customers are going to they're going to expect more from us in terms of our technology and in terms of our ability to transact online. I just think there's absolutely no doubt about that. COVID didn't cause that, but COVID is accelerating that. Then in terms of talent, I still believe, and I think most people still believe there's huge value in people getting together for collaboration, for teamwork, for innovation. People need people. They need contact. They need to be social. And I do not believe, honestly, that all this great technology can replace that, but it certainly can supplement that. And we have leaned very heavily on technology for those connections during COVID. I do think people are going to be, work is going to be more flexible in the future. We've proven we can do it. I think people will be able to probably work from home some, come into the office some. I'm not sure people are going to need to relocate potentially to take a job. So I think we as an industry are going to need to learn to be more flexible with our workforce. And I think that's actually exciting because I think we can attract talent that we might not have been able to attract before. You know, if we're going to require, I love Richmond, Virginia, where we're based. Not everybody wants to live in Richmond, Virginia. Right. So I think in the new world we will have after COVID, you're going to see more of those arrangements where we can have people working for Markel, but they don't have to live here in Richmond, Virginia. They can visit, come to important meetings, things of that sort. But the world will be a more flexible place. I also think this could help us with diversity and inclusion too. We are in a suburb here in Richmond, Virginia. We're in the South. I wouldn't say we're in the most diverse part of the world, in Glen Allen, Virginia, which is a suburb of Richmond, Virginia. I think the use of technology, the ability to be more flexible with work arrangements, that should help us be able to obtain a more diverse workforce as an industry. So I think we can look at a lot of positives, trying to find the silver lining, if you will, out of COVID. I think there are some positives there in terms of being able to attract talent to our organization. And we want to be an employer of choice at Markel. And we think the flexibility that we will be able to offer on the other side of COVID will be a big part of that.
That's all very positive and progressive, I think, as well. But when it comes to, I suppose, the age old, and you mentioned it earlier, but the face-to-face interaction, the kind of, the looking the broker in the eye, and also kind of instilling, a corporate identity into your employees. I mean, how do you go about doing that in this environment and, without that face-to-face?
Well, I certainly didn't say, we're going 100% work from home and we're selling all our corporate real estate. That's just not going to happen. There is still huge value in face-to-face interaction. People are social animals. And so I'm sure we will provide more flexibility to our employees, but I think everybody needs to recognize we still need to come together for important goals and to achieve them. So, we're not one of those organizations that's saying we're going to be 100% work from home on the other side of this. We're trying to take a measured approach and recognizing, more flexibility is certainly warranted. We've proven we can be more flexible and still achieve goals, but there's just too much value created by being together. And the analogy I've used with our folks is, we built a lot of chips in the first 90 years of Markel's existence, building relationships with partners and customers and each other. And honestly, to some extent, over these last 6 or so months, we've been cashing some of those chips. Once we get to the other side of COVID, we need to start building our chips again. And we need to be getting out and spending time with customers and partners and each other. Maybe not as much flying and plane time as we had before this, but there's still going to be a need for it.
Well, I'm afraid we've run out of time, Richie, but thanks so much for taking part in this and giving us so many of your great insights. And thanks as well to you, our listeners, for listening in. We've got a great pipeline of podcasts coming up, so do visit our website at www.theinsurer.com for further details and to access more of our high-value content.